Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Number 2. This is Shirley Abram and Marion Cavett. Today is March 22, 1974, and we are interviewing Rabbi Solomon Prehoff.
We are descendants on my father's side from the founder of the Lithuanian Hasidic movement, the famous Lubavitch movement. The head of it was, of course, known as the Alter Rebbe, the old rabbi, who is revered by all his descendants. It would be a great burden to me to have been a descendant of one of his sons, because the Lubavitcher in New York keep on calling me up to come to meetings of the family. Fortunately for us, we are descendants of a daughter, Frieda. And all variations of our family names are variations of Frieda. I will tell you one peculiar one. I have, I suppose, a second cousin or a third cousin who's long since dead. His name was Friedkin, which means, of course, a descendant of Frieda. And what do you think he did for a living? He was the manager and leader of a Kazakh dancing band. And so all these Kazakhs, with all this squatting, kicking around, half of them were Jews, and the leader was a second cousin of mine, whose name, first name, of course, was Boris. Boris Friedkin. Now, I guess that he was a descendant of the Alter Rebbe, the founder of the Lubavitcher Hasidim. So fortunately, being merely a descendant of a daughter, the daughter Frieda, I am able always to refuse the kind invitations of the Lubavitcher to come to various celebrations. The only thing that remains in my life of this Lubavitcher descent is that Lillian, my dear wife, pesters me on the fifth day of Hanukkah to give her a big gift. The reason for it is this. The Alter Rebbe was, of course, in a state of rivalry, although basic friendship, with the Vilna Gaon, the great eminence of Jewish learning. And part, because of that dispute, because the Vilna Gaon tried or was persuaded to try to suppress the nascent Hasidic movement, my ancestor, the old rabbi, was sent in jail to St. Petersburg. I leave out all the miracles whereby he was redeemed from jail, but the date of his being set free was the fifth day of Hanukkah. And to all Chabad Hasidim and their descendants, their children and their wives, get a little extra money on the fifth day of Hanukkah, known as the Fifter Lichter, fifth little light. It used to be at home that Father actually gave us a nickel, 5 pennies, but I have reached the stage in which I have to give Lillian $5. This is what has happened to the Hasidic movement. At all events, Father, as a young married man, emigrated from the town of Shklov. Shklov was a famous city of Jewish learning. It's in the government known as the government of Molyev, Mogilev. Molyev and Vitebsk were the two parts of ancient medieval Poland that Catherine the Great took away from the Polish government and formed the first Jewish settlements in what is now Russia. You see? So from Molyev, the government, or we would say the state of Molyev, that was the homeland of all these Chabad Hasidim, who are flourishing so much nowadays, and who were the first to combine Talmudic learning with mystic lore. That was their uniqueness, you see. Now other Hasidic groups are engaged in Talmudic knowledge, but these were the first. So my father, as a young married man, I think my mother was an old maid of 19 when she married. Why they waited so long? Oh, father then became an apprentice to a scribe, a sofer, in the city of Chernigov. Chernigov was the northernmost large city in the Ukraine. and how Father came to go there. His father was also a scribe, a very famous scribe. How Father came to Chernigov was this. When the third successor of the old rabbi, the famous Tzemach Tzedek, died, he left a family of sons. His oldest son was not deemed to be worthy of succeeding his father, and they selected a younger son. And the older son then left and went to the Ukraine, to the nearest big city in the Ukraine. So Chernigov was the only Ukrainian city that was a Chabad Hasidic stronghold. And therefore there were bonds between the government, Shklov and so forth. The father went there. And he told me that the man who trained him, for whom he worked, writing, say, for Torahs, to write about 2 or 3 a year, cheated him and never paid him for his first year's work. But that's an old story and there's no one left to sue. My mother's family, there were 15 children and all but she died of the cholera. And she is left. And my grandfather emigrated to London later and became my Hebrew teacher. And he was, as you say, my rabbi. And all his descendants of his second marriage, we children never knew that they were half-relatives, are all rather distinguished people in England. There are about 30 cousins, second cousins. Lillian knows them all. I don't know them, except 2 or 3. My cousin Lewis is a physician. He's also the head of the British Amateur Boxing Association. And he was given the Order of British Empire last year, and he and his wife Lily, who insisted she had to get a new frock, as you said, for it, had to be presented to Queen Elizabeth to get the Order of the British Empire. Now, I don't want you to think that my cousin Lewis got the Order of the British Empire because he was a great physician, which he is. He got it because he was the head of the British Amateur Boxing Association. Now then, so Father father immigrated to London, and we children were born there. And I remember my school days very, very clearly. We went to Deal Street School. The first 3 years, boys and girls were together, and that was called infant school. And after that, they didn't consider it proper for boys and girls to sit together. So after the fourth grade, or as we called it, the fourth standard, the boys went to boys' school, and the girls went to girls' school, to Deal Street School. By the way, that whole neighborhood, and my grandfather, of blessed memory, lived a block away. I was born in a little street called Black Lion Yard. Typical little Black Lion London street. You come in from Whitechapel Road and it goes out to Old Montague Street. I mentioned these sweet old names. And as it goes into Old Montague Street, it enters that street by 4 stairs, which are divided up by cannons embodied in the concrete as a sort of a defense. Apparently, the British government, over its many victories over the world, would stick these cannons in the sidewalks of various parts of London. And on those, I was born on number 5 Black Lion Yard. And it seems, I'm always sad about it, my mother had a hard time with me. I must have been a big baby. And according to the tradition in the family, when mother was first able to get up, she held me in her arms and stood in the door of number 5 Black Lion Yard, and a costermonger came by and saw me and said, "Here, missus, get a wheelbarrow." But I couldn't have been quite that big. But then costermongers are really known to exaggerate. At all events, I must tell you this. When I was 60, which is now 21 years ago, I took Lillian to London for the first time, and she met my cousins and knows all of them and knew them right away and who's who. I have to ask her to this day. So my cousin Lewis Blonstein, the doctor, took me really, we took Lillian to show her my birthplace in 5 Black Lion Yard. That whole neighborhood, that old Jewish neighborhood, has become Pakistani, black. But Black Lion Yard remains a store, a Jewish jewelry stores, little modest stores on Black Lion Yard. It's a lovely day, and this Jewish jeweler was sitting in a chair in front of the shop. And my cousin Lewis wanted to take my photograph in front of the house, little house in which I was born. And he wanted to ask permission of the little Jewish jeweler who sat there sunning himself in the sun, ignoring all these people. So my cousin said to him that this American gentleman, referring to me, was born in this house 60 years ago. The little Jewish man was unimpressed. All he said was, "Fancy that." And that explained to Lillian why there was no plaque that the British government had put on the house where I was born. It evidently wasn't quite so important. If you think it's important, remember what the little English jeweler said, "Fancy that, it isn't quite so much." At all events, most of this neighborhood has been bombed. It wasn't that, it may have been that Hitler enjoyed having the Luftwaffe bomb the Jews. Really what he was concerned about were the wharfs, docks, which weren't far away. At all events, much of it is bombed. The house where I was born, as I told you, is still there, and the school I went to was still there. And the street, the house in which we lived most, the 97 Hanbury Street, was all blown up. And where my grandfather lived, to whom I went to cheder, who taught me on Spelman Street, remembering that, 25 Spelman Street. You know, when, as you get older, your older memories, recent things are forgotten. 25 Spelman Street. And I remember the old gentleman, sweet old man. He died at 62, which was to me a tremendous age. The first dead body I had ever seen. You know, that's a shocking experience to a child of 7 or 8, you know. And it was done in real Orthodox fashion. The body laid on the ground, with candles around it. It was gruesome for me, but apparently you get over these things. And so we went to see it again. What did I want Lillian to see, especially on Hanbury Street? Oh, yes. Across the house where we lived then on Hanbury Street, there was a Jewish bakery. And I don't know whether it was Jewish or not, it was a bakery. And they had for a halfpenny in those days cakes with red icing and white icing, and they were called, with a peculiar English sense of humor, stuffed monkeys. And I wanted Lydia to see a stuffed monkey, but no one knew anything about it anymore. So you see how your childhood vanishes. When I was, I guess, the age of 9, my father and my older brother preceded us to America. They emigrated, and they went to New York, and then father and my older brother went to Baltimore. Just why, I don't know. I think father got some sort of position or had some task to write a Sefer Torah in Baltimore. Whatever it was, he went to Baltimore. And the year later, a year and a half later, we emigrated. We followed. And think what that meant. My dear mother, with all the brood around her, one child in arms, my baby sister Fanny, who's now in the 70s, I'm sure, and all of them, by the way, are all alive. And we took a boat from Liverpool, the Red Star Line, which doesn't exist, and the boat was called Lake Erie. And We took us 2.5 weeks, I think, to cross the ocean, and we landed in Quebec. How strange it all was, and Mother had us all around her. How she did it, I don't know. But all immigrants are heroes, anyhow, and especially Jewish immigrants. And we came then through by railroad into New York State. And then we got to New York and stayed with my grandmother, my father's mother, who was a bearcat. She was a person of quick Irish temper. Where she got it from, she had it. At all events, we stayed there. Let me tell you something. My uncle, that's to say my father's younger brother, long since gone, took me. We were in New York for 2 weeks on the way to Baltimore. Took me to Coney Island. And you'll have never a concept of what a gorgeous first hot dog, first Jewish hot dog, tasted to a virgin little Jewish palate. Now, I'll never forget the taste of that hot dog on the boardwalk in Coney Island. There, now it became, I can't even think of them without indigestion today, but it was simply heavenly, and I remember it was the climax of my boyhood, a hot dog on Coney Island, and so spiced, you know how they're spiced. At all events, we got to Baltimore, and I went to a school. They still call that school German English School. Baltimore had a large German population, German Christian population, besides an old German Jewish community. And the school still taught German. And Rabbi Brickner's wife, Rebecca, who's still alive and well, thank God, and lives in Cleveland, she sat next to me in the class. And when I saw her a few years ago, one of my last public lectures, that was Rabbi Lelyveld that invited me to come, they opened, I think, a hall at the temple in honor of the late Barney Brickner. And I came for it, and Rebecca and I reminisced and sang the German songs that we learned and all sorts of things. She was a great help to me in the World Union. Very able woman. At all events, had a great tragedy last year. Her son Balfour's daughter, Joy, was killed riding a horse. And it's a very sad experience to her. At all events, we went to this school. And there's something about Baltimore, I must tell you. Lived through the Baltimore fire, the great Baltimore fire. And imagine all that raining sparks all over the city. You didn't know whether you'd be burnt up or not. There's one drawback about Baltimore, a lovely, lovely city. I was born in London, as I told you, in which fish is a staple article of diet. As a matter of fact, it's part of the Jewish religion in London. I'll tell you how. And no one else would likely to tell you that. You see, naturally you don't cook on Shabbos. And by the way, in the summer, it gets light very early, and men go to shul hours earlier than here. Now then, and Father read the Torah as a Bal Korei at the shul and conducted services. It was Vine Court Shul, I remember that. Vine Court Shul. Well, you'd come home then from services, Sabbath morning service, at about 10 a.m. Then you had a sort of a brunch breakfast. And the breakfast was invariably fried fish. Cold fried, the fish is placed, P-L-A-I-C-E, which is a gorgeous fish related to the sole or the flounder. It has the misfortune of being very easily caught and therefore is cheap. If it were as hard to catch as Dover sole, it would be the aristocratic fish. A wonderful, I introduced Lillian to it, and she was delighted to have it. At all events, place, fried place, was part of the Jewish religion in every home on Shabbos morning when the folks came home from shul, a platter of fried fish. At all events, in London I got used to fish, Baltimore also, and then fate sent me to Cincinnati, to Chicago, and to Pittsburgh, and I don't get fresh fish, I miss it. And when we go either to California or to Florida, I can't for the first 2 weeks get enough fish to eat. And it's a strange thing how your life habits are determined by your early years. At all events, then we settled in Baltimore, went to the German English school, then went to the Baltimore City College, which was the high school. Then, and also to Cheder, not to Cheder, to a Talmud Torah, that was taught by two principals in succession. One was Steinberg, who had then sons in the rabbinate. And one was Mr. Tarshish, whose older son became a rabbi, a colleague of mine, a classmate of mine. How I came to go to the Hebrew Union College, when normally, and from my background, I should have gone to a yeshiva, or the yeshivas weren't developed then very much. Could have gone to the seminary in New York, which at least was half Orthodox, being conservative. But what happened was this. Jack Tarshish and I became a classmate later in Cincinnati, died a few years ago, became a famous radio star, the Lamplighter. He gave inspirational talks for years. He had left the rabbinate in Columbus. What happened was this. Jack Tarshish and I were thinking idly of the rabbinate. Now wait, I know what happened. We first thought, we were chums, went to school together, we first thought of engineering. So when we graduated from the public school, from the German English school, 8th grade, we had to register in one of the two high schools, either the Baltimore City College, which was general education, or the Baltimore Polytechnic Institute, which was in preparation for engineering. We came first to the Baltimore Polytechnic Institute, and the line to register was so long we got discouraged, and that's how it comes that I'm not an engineer today. And we went to the Baltimore City College, and we registered there. After we had been there for the first 3 years, we wondered about our career, and somebody suggested, why don't we consult Dr. William Rosenbaum, who was the rabbi of Ohr Sholem Temple, the old German Jewish community of the three great Reformed temples there. There are three, and there I think there may be more now, but there were three Reformed temples. And we visited Dr. Rosenau. He was a gruff man. He turned out to be a gruff agent. He said to us, "Why do you want to go to Hebrew Union College? Why don't you go to seminary?" And we had no answer. We were silent. And so he continued, he conducted a conversation with himself, and he said, "All right, you come next Monday and I'll teach you." And this, we had no bond to him, he had no obligation to us. And for 2 full years, he taught us twice a week in preparation for the Hebrew Union College. Later he had other pupils, Bernard Bamberger, who's rabbi in New York, was again one of his boys, but Jack Tarshish and I were the first. So we went to the Hebrew Union College. In those days it was 8 classes, and of course Dr. Rosenau, bless him, had prepared us. We started in the 5th class instead of the 1st. And for the first year, where would I get money? He had a scholarship from the temple to start me. Never forget him. I mean, he really a wonderful man, Dr. William Rosenau. I don't know whether he has any descendants living. I remember his wife, a very handsome woman, came from Omaha, Nebraska. And that's all I remember. But that's how it happened. Because of the generosity and open-handedness of Dr. Rosenau, took these two boys from East Baltimore, two Orthodox Jewish boys, and made them his pupils, and started for himself a career of teaching individual boys that gave interest to his life. So that's the story.